Hi there, my name's Aaron Matek.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And we are Useful Idiots, the irreverent politics podcast calling out corporate politicians and their media stenographers.
Here, no one is safe from our ridicule. A wise journalist once said that all news can fit into the four basic food groups of news.
The four food groups are Democrats suck, Republicans suck, isn't that weird, and isn't that terrible. Each week, we deep dive on one news story from each category, covering the 2024 election, America's endless proxy wars, and so much more.
Plus, we host weekly interviews with politicians, journalists, writers, rock stars, comedians, and more.
Past guests include Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters, Abby Martin, Noor Erekat, Oliver Stone, Bernie Sanders, and David Cross.
So ditch corporate media and learn what's really going on in the world with Useful Idiots. New episodes drop every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
This is Jessica, and you're listening to the Asian Madness Podcast. Hey everyone, we finally hit episode 120. It's not a huge milestone, but sometimes every episode feels like a milestone because of all the time and effort that gets put into making it. I'm just really happy that some of you came across my podcast and decided to check it out. And if you decided to stay for the ride, that's even cooler. Most of my friends don't really listen to my podcast, which is fine. It's honestly kind of embarrassing having people I know personally listen to me. And if they do, it makes me wonder if they're just being nice. Like they secretly hate it, but they want to be supportive. What I'm trying to say is that it means a lot to me when complete strangers decide to give me a chance. So, we've done a fair share of true crime cases over the past few episodes, and as always, I like to do a gentle palate cleanser with urban legends. From nonfiction to fiction. Sure, some might sound a little scary, but the unknown is the fun part, isn't it? I'm sure many of you out there do not believe in ghosts or the paranormal, but that doesn't take away the excitement of feeling scared. Or, if you're like me, then it's more of a maybe situation. I've never seen a ghost, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. Maybe they just don't want me to see them. So, today, as always, I will bring you five different tales from the Asian continent. Some, again, are spooky, some are kind of wacky, and some are just kind of twisty. Listen on, and whether you believe in it or not, it's your decision to make. Let's begin. We will begin our journey today with a story from Indonesia. There seems to be a similar version of this from Malaysia, but we will focus on Indonesia's version for today. Sorry, Malaysia. So as you might or might not remember from my first Indonesian episode from ages ago, most people from Indonesia identify as Muslims, close to 90%. So understandably, every religion has their own way of living life, which can include how they eat, how they dress, and how they bid farewell to the dead. And that's what we will focus on today. I cannot say this is how it's done for every single Muslim living in Indonesia, but just know that this is what I found. So once a Muslim has passed on, people will help to bathe the body and wrap it up with a specific type of shroud, or fabric. Then the shroud will be tied up at five different areas around the body. The top of their head, around their neck, hands in front of their torso, their knees, and around their ankles. These ties had to be secured in order to keep the body from moving around. And I'm not saying spooky ghosts moving around kind of thing, but just to keep it in a resting position. So after all that is done, the body is then ready for burial. But a very crucial step must be taken. The knots on the shroud must be loosened for burial, because if not, the corpse can very likely come back to life as a pokong. What exactly is a pokong? Not even sure if I'm pronouncing it right, but bear with me. The word itself, according to the internet, means wrapped in shroud. So basically, a corpse that is wrapped in fabric. They have a very distinct look because of the way they are wrapped. But underneath the shroud, there is no specific way to describe it. It can largely depend on how the body is doing in the decomposition phase and how the body was when it was buried. Some can come back after being dead for years, and some can come back days after being buried. Some will look more human, but extremely pale, while older corpses can look more skeletal, with not much left on its exterior, as in featureless and kind of empty looking. In a way, the pokong is a person wrapped up in some type of large cloth and tied in specific points to avoid it from moving around. But how does it move if it comes back to life? Since its ankles are bound, it can make walking extremely difficult, and because they're not really human, these pokong will simply float. The visuals, if you can imagine, can be quite unsettling. It's like a body wrapped in sheets coming at you while floating. But something to note is that these mythical creatures are not known to want to cause people harm, at least not most of them. While their actions can be unpredictable, it can range from wanting to just scare people to seeing their loved ones and pass on messages. Physical harm is less heard of. But again, you can never be too careful with things you don't understand. Although we might think of pokongs as some kind of zombie, digging their way out of the grave in their funeral cloths, it doesn't seem that they are actual physical beings. For one thing, they are said to float, not hop around as you might think. They are also said to have the ability to travel through walls and even teleport from place to place. What's even more interesting is that these pokongs are kind of like group creatures. They can form their own little colonies, basically hang out with others just like them. But most times when a living person encounters one, they are usually alone, as they are not known to travel in groups. They might come together eventually to live together, though. While they are not known to be very dangerous, the sight of one can be quite unpleasant, as basically you're looking at the face of a dead person at varying degrees of decomposition. Pokongs are mainly stuff of myths and legends, but are there stories of people encountering them? Absolutely. I found a few online, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But even if you don't think they're real, they can still be creepy. First story. A man was arriving home late at night, and he arrives at a fork in the road. While both paths lead to home, he decided to take the shorter path this time because it was late. Unfortunately, that shorter path is also kind of spookier because of an abandoned house that sits along the path. As the person turned onto the path, he instantly began to feel very odd and very cold. Of course, proper steps were taken, such as grabbing the jacket from the back of the car and turning off the car's air conditioner. But it was still freezing. As he stopped along the side of the abandoned house, he saw from the corner of his eye a white figure by the side of the house. It was not one of those women dressed in white dresses, but something wrapped completely in white, like a pokong. The face was showing through the fabric, and the man noticed the pokong's face was charred, as if they had died in a fire. The man quickly drove away because he wasn't about to stick around to find out. Once he got back, he ran into his house to take cover. While he was inside, he felt his foot hit something, and when he looked closely, he realized it was the same pokong he saw outside the abandoned house, the same charred face staring back at him. Immediately, he fainted. He woke up 5 days later, realizing that his maid had called for help when she found him the next day, lying on the floor, unconscious. The man was confused as to why he ran into a pogon, so he did a bit of research. Turns out, the abandoned house along the path sits on an old graveyard, and that graveyard was basically destroyed when someone tried to build a house on its grounds. The construction work continued to experience issues, and in the end, the people just gave up. The pogon appeared as if asking for help to remove the home, as it was technically sitting on top of their resting place. In a sense, the pogon wasn't out there to get this man, but was just trying to get help. In another story, around the year 2007 in East Java, a pogon was rumored to be seen riding a ghost carriage and would stop to knock on people's doors late at night. This pogon, though, was not asking for help. They were one of the few that were out to cause some harm. While many people did not answer their door, those who did ended up with some mysterious illness that was incurable and would soon die. How did this ghost carriage pogon even come about? Rumor states that a young man was once seeing a young woman who happened to be from a rich family. The girl's family, though, strongly disapproved of this young man and refused to let him marry her. But as two young people in love, they decided to take their lives into their own hands and elope. Except, their secret ceremony was witnessed by a friend of the girl's father. He immediately went to report this to the father, who then gathered all his friends to put a stop to this. By the time the father and his mob arrived, though, the couple had already wed and were riding off into the sunset in a horse carriage. The father, though, was so angry he began to chase after the couple, and as the couple tried to get away, they failed to see a truck coming at them, which caused them both to die. And this is the origin of the pogon on a ghost horse carriage. Myth or not, it's never a bad idea to respect and follow tradition. I obviously cannot say whether they're real or not, but why not be safe than sorry? For our second story, let's move on over to Vietnam, where we will learn about a tourist encounter with something uncomfortable. Where the tourist is from, I cannot be sure, but I believe they are from Taiwan. A man decided to go to Vietnam on a solo trip, because why not? It's not a long plane ride from Taiwan, the food is good, things are not very expensive. It's an extremely popular vacation destination, so the man was really looking forward to it. He arrived at his hotel, which is a 4-star hotel, so shouldn't be too bad, right? He was assigned a room at the very end of the hallway, and if you remember from my episode Sleeping with Ghosts, it's generally not the best room for those who are into feng shui or superstition. Well, this man didn't want to make a big deal out of it, so he took his keys and went to his room. As soon as he stepped in, though, he surveyed the room and realized something did not feel right. Although it was a gut feeling at first, the strange stains by the bed didn't do anything to ease his fears. It was like every cell in his body was telling him something was not right, so he decided to follow his gut. He called the front desk and asked to be moved to another room. Interestingly, the front desk clerk didn't even bother asking for a reason. Sometimes they do ask, because they want to know what is wrong with the room so they can fix it. But to the man, it almost felt like this was expected, and not the first time people have asked to switch rooms. He was glad he made the call, and he was immediately switched to another room. Everything seemed normal in his new room, so he left his bags and decided to go out for food and to explore a bit. Later that night, he returned and got ready for bed. But after stepping out of the shower, a weird feeling began to creep in again. A very unsettling one. He felt like he was not alone in his room, and while he couldn't find anyone hiding in his room, he would constantly feel like he was being watched. He decided to ignore this feeling this time, because he had already switched rooms, and for all he knew, he could just be overthinking. As we know, hotel beds tend to tuck in all four corners of the top bed sheets, and most people I know like to untuck everything to feel less confined. This man, though, did not do that. He preferred having the two bottom corners tucked in, as it gave him a sense of security, like being tucked into a bed firmly. So he crawled into bed, turned off the lights, hoping that he was just overthinking. Soon, he fell asleep. But sometime in the middle of the night, he woke up. Not because he heard a noise, but because he felt the blanket sliding down at the end of the bed. He began to pull them back up, thinking he must have kicked it, but it began to feel as if someone was tugging it down on purpose. He grabbed onto his blankets and refused to let go. And once he won this weird tug-of-war game, he suddenly felt one side of his bed sink, as if someone had sat down on the bed next to him. He felt immense fear, but he was unable to think of what to do. That's when he suddenly became nauseous and had to run to the bathroom. He spent a good chunk of the time on the toilet, and when he finally felt better, he went to the sink to wash up. He looked at himself in the mirror and noticed that there was a weird dark shape looming above his head. It was reflected in the mirror, but he couldn't see it when he looked up. He thought about what to do and decided that he could no longer spend more time in his room alone. He quickly grabbed his essentials and headed over to the hotel lobby, where he stayed until the sun came up. When morning came, his only thought was to get as far away from this hotel as possible. But of course, he had to go back to his room to grab his things, and he dreaded that, even in daytime. He carefully entered his room, and as he approached his closet, the door suddenly slid open on its own. He grabbed everything he owned and ran out, swearing to never return again. This is a pretty standard urban legend about a haunted hotel room, where perhaps something was there in the first room he was at, and it noticed him. But upon seeing him leave, the spirit, or the ghost, decided to follow him to his new room. Could it just have been his imagination? Was the spirit really there and wanted to send a message? Or could he have just gotten food poisoning, and you add a layer of fear on top of that, could have caused him to think of worst case scenarios? A little bit of paranoia? I mean, anything is possible. I always wonder if anything sketchy has happened in any hotels I stay at. But if a hotel is old enough, it is likely someone could have died there at some point. So, spirit or not, you be the judge.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hi there, my name's Aaron Matek.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And we are Useful Idiots, the irreverent politics podcast calling out corporate politicians and their media stenographers.
Here, no one is safe from our ridicule. A wise journalist once said that all news can fit into the four basic food groups of news.
The four food groups are Democrats suck, Republicans suck, isn't that weird, and isn't that terrible. Each week, we deep dive on one news story from each category, covering the 2024 election, America's endless proxy wars, and so much more.
Plus, we host weekly interviews with politicians, journalists, writers, rock stars, comedians, and more.
Past guests include Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters, Abby Martin, Noor Erekat, Oliver Stone, Bernie Sanders, and David Cross.
So ditch corporate media and learn what's really going on in the world with Useful Idiots. New episodes drop every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.
Next up, let's take a quick trip up north to China, where we will look into a young couple both studying at a university. Their love was quite pure. And although they adored each other, they knew that their studies took priority in their lives at the moment. By chance or by luck, the two of them managed to move into the same dormitory building on the university grounds. But of course, being of the opposite sex, they were separated by different floors, where the boys lived on the lower floors and the girls lived on the higher floors. The boy, though, managed to snag a room directly beneath his girlfriend's room, and even though they were apart, they were still kind of close in a way. While visiting each other's rooms was allowed, they were both extremely busy, so it was a rare occurrence for them to see each other. I guess knowing that their rooms were directly above and below their own was comforting. The two kids were both medical students, and we all know that requires a lot of studying and late nights. In order to make her boyfriend feel loved, the girl would make oxtail soup every day and lower it to his window. This was pre-mobile phone era, so this was definitely an act of kindness and love. She wanted him to be healthy, to have the energy to study at night, so she would make sure he had his oxtail soup every single night. The boy would then grab the container and take it through his window. It gave him a warm, fuzzy feeling knowing that his girlfriend wanted the best for him. Days like these continued on, and it wasn't strange for them to not see each other for days sometimes. It's a big school, and they were both very busy. But one thing they did continue was her daily delivery of oxtail soup. One night, the usual soup arrived, but instead of giving him extra energy and motivation, he ate his soup and immediately fell asleep at his desk. He was tired, so it was understandable. He woke up the next morning, still at his desk. He decided he had to return all the empty containers in his room to his girlfriend, one floor above. So off he went, excited to be able to see her. As he arrived at her room, he knocked. Her roommates were there, but not his girlfriend. He asked if they knew where she was at, and immediately noticed their somber-looking faces. Then they broke the news. His girlfriend had died a few days ago from some mysterious illness. He was shocked and devastated. He felt terrible as he was her boyfriend, and yet he wasn't even there for her. He was struck with grief, mourning her and thinking about her, but suddenly, another thought came to him. So, if his girlfriend had been dead for several days already, then who had been sending him the soup the past few days? This is an open-ended urban legend. Food is a huge part of most cultures, for sure. And that is no different in Chinese culture. A lot of small talk is centered around food, like instead of asking how someone's doing, we might ask them, have you eaten? Are you hungry? And regardless of their answer, you offer them food anyway. Chinese people sometimes go very far in encouraging others to eat, like try this, try that. It can definitely get a bit pushy. Chinese-style dining is where everyone sits around a round table and share all types of food. Because if the food is good, you want everyone to have some. It's a bit hard to explain, but this kind of legend, real or not, is very believable to me. While you can say the girlfriend loved her boyfriend so much, she would materialize even in death to keep him fed, you can also say, maybe the roommates were instructed by the dying girl to help her out with this. What would seem more plausible to you? And which version would you prefer to be real? Up to you. Moving a bit to the east, let's see what South Korea has to offer us today. You've heard of people say things like, humans are the real monsters among us. So maybe these ghost stories are not scary for you because you don't believe in ghosts. So how can something you don't believe exists even scare you? But you do believe in humans, right? And sometimes a person can be even more deadly and terrifying. Think of those urban legends about serial killers hiding or patients that escaped the mental asylum. Sure, you know these people do exist, but what scares you is not only what they can do to you, but also the surprise factor. Like, where are they? That would be the case for this man, some people refer to as Mr. Cuckoo, or the Cuckoo Man. Once upon a time in Seoul, a man was mentally ill and was sent to live in a mental health or psychiatric hospital. During his stay at the hospital, something happened with another patient. A young woman attacked him brutally and left a mark on his face. This probably would be traumatic for most people, but especially so for someone who was already struggling mentally. It was said that this man eventually found an opportunity and escaped the hospital. Not great. He's not just a danger to himself, but also to others around him. So while the police did look for him, it didn't seem like they saw him as a top priority. Yes, he's a patient from a hospital. Yes, he's mentally unstable. But in the grand scheme of police things, he's probably less dangerous than a serial killer or a robber. Not long after his escape, it was said that there were various random acts of violence all around schools and all targeting young schoolgirls. It seems that the attack in the hospital left a lasting impression on this man, and he became fixated on young schoolgirls. In one instance, a few young girls, maybe middle school or high schoolers, were walking down a deserted street when they heard a man's voice say, "Cuckoo, cuckoo." This was pretty strange to them, so they turned around and started looking around, maybe even thinking it could have been a friend of theirs. Very quickly, an adult male jumped out from the alleyway and proceeded to attack them viciously. Some say with a bat, some say with an axe. Similar accounts began to pop up all over the city, and unlike many violent attackers that we hear about, this man only went after groups of girls, never someone who was alone. It almost feels like he enjoys the collective screams and the chaos it brings. Or maybe having more people in a group can guarantee a higher chance of getting somebody? Who knows? Because so many similar stories are being told around schools, people began to warn each other about the cuckoo man, or the man that will yell, "Cuckoo, cuckoo," at you while hiding somewhere nearby. If you do hear it, you must respond to him by yelling back, "Cuckoo, cuckoo," and then run for your life. I guess either way you should run for your life, so I'm not sure responding to him makes a difference. It's quite possible this is chalked up to a school-ground urban legend, where bored kids make up stories to scare each other. But if this is real, these schoolgirls seem to be his only target, so it does kind of make sense that no one else has encountered him. For all we know, he could be that super normal-looking guy shopping in the convenience store, or the young man reading the newspaper in a coffee shop. He just hangs out and waits until it's time for him to indulge in his fantasy. Those who have supposedly seen this man describe him as a tall man, around 30 to 35 years of age, with a sturdy build, and seems to always be wearing a little black hat. I guess if you're in Korea and you're a teenage girl, you might want to be careful and avoid walking in isolated streets with your girlfriends. While Mr. Cuckoo is not necessarily a supernatural presence, it can still play into your fears of the unknown, especially as a woman. Last tale of the day. Let us hop on over to the island next door, that is Japan, the land of urban legends. This is less of a story but more of a game, and once I'm done explaining it to you, you can decide if you want to play it or skip it. I myself skip all these games I tell you about, because I'd rather not find out. This is not your typical game though, as this game, the Hyakumonogatari Kaidankai, is a parlor game that originated during the Edo period, between the 1600s and the mid-1800s. I guess people have been fascinated with scary stories for a long time, so these scary stories definitely are not a new thing. The name itself, as in Hyakumonogatari Kaidankai, pretty much just translates to 100 ghost stories. The goal of the game is not just to tell ghost stories, but to summon spirits in the end. Pretty simple, right? Let's take a quick look at the history of the game and find out how to play it. Samurais. That's what many people believe this game came from. So during hot summers back in the day, samurais would gather at night, in the dark, to tell each other stories about ghouls, monsters, and spirits as a way to test their courage. We've probably all done this when we were kids, whether around a campfire or with your friends in the dark with a flashlight. But how exactly does this game test their courage? Here's how it goes. A group of people will sit together in a room with 100 traditional lamps or candles, all lit. So clearly the room is very well lit at the time. The players then take turns telling ghost stories, and every time someone finishes a story, they have to blow out a candle or snuff out a lamp, depending on what light source you're using. As more stories get told, the room will eventually get darker and darker until the last one remains. Once the light source is gone, a ghost, a spirit, or something of that sort should show up. It's definitely a long game and it requires patience. Maybe the more people you play with, the better it will be, because there's only so many stories one person can tell, and it can probably get exhausting. Another more complicated version of this game exists as well, so I'll try my best to explain it. This second version requires more of said courage, because it's not just using one room, but three rooms that need to be connected. It might be difficult for us to find a place with this sort of layout, but it was probably doable in the old-timey Japanese-style houses, where a room is probably only separated by a paper door. So in this variation, room 1 will have 99 lit candles or lamps and a mirror. The other end room, room 3, is where the 100th candle or lamp is positioned, and all the participants sit in this room as in room 3. So room number 2, the one in the middle, is pitch black. Imagine yourself sitting in a room and you can see down a hallway encompassing two other rooms. The middle room is completely dark, and the room at the very end is very well lit with 99 candles. Every time a storyteller finishes their story, they need to take the only light source in room 3, walk through room 2, reach room 1, extinguish one light source, look in the mirror, and return to room 3. This is repeated until the very last light remaining is the one from room 3. And when the last story is told, everyone travels together to room 1, extinguish the last light, and look in the mirror. This should complete the game, and if you're lucky or unlucky, a spirit will come out to greet you or to harm you. Like I mentioned, this is a very long game. If one story is 5 minutes, then 100 stories would be 500 minutes, which equals to around 8 hours. That's exhausting. Also, it can sometimes feel like a good idea when you start, but because this game is such a slow burn, many people tend to change their minds as the game progresses. For one thing, it only continues to get darker, so it can really mess with your head when you see shadows jumping around or hear random sounds. Many people may choose to start the game, and if they do reach the 99th story, they may choose to stop after that one so they can quit the game with one single candle still burning. As long as that one is still lit, then the game ritual is not complete, so the spirit technically should not appear. I don't know if the spirits actually follow the rules, but you can always give it a try and let me know. As I mentioned, this game seemed to have an origin from the samurais and warrior class. It was such a popular game that it began to spread to other classes. People everywhere began to actively seek out stories to tell others, and this brought on the popularity of ghost stories in society. I definitely believe this could be the entire reason why Japan is seen as the country of urban legends, because people literally had to come up with so many tales to tell each other at night. This game is depicted in various TV shows and mangas as well. There was a TV show from 2002 called Kaidan Hyakumonogatari. And for me, ideally, it should have run for 100 episodes, but it ran for 11 episodes. A really good question is, what happens when you blow out the 100th candle? Honestly, I don't know. You can find out for me, or just leave that as an open ending. I guess it's like using the Ouija board. You might get a neutral spirit, or you might get something that really wants to harm you. Or you might get nothing at all. You'll never know what happens until you try it. So, there you have it. Another 5 weird tales from the East. Which of these stories did you find creepy, if any? I've asked people around me how they feel about ghosts and spirits, and it's usually half of them saying they believe or might believe, and the other half not believing. Most of my friends who are Asian definitely tend to be believers, and it's so common to hear about weird possession stories or random red envelopes on the side of the street. In a way, it gives me more material, so I'll definitely be including those in my future episodes. I guess it doesn't really matter whether we believe in ghosts, the Mothman, Bigfoot, or fairies. Maybe one day we'll all find out, or maybe it will just remain a mystery forever. Either way, remember to be kind and alert. Don't go around putting yourself in danger. Or others, of course. Take care, be safe, and till next time.
Hi there, my name's Aaron Matek.
And I'm Katie Halper.
And we are Useful Idiots, the irreverent politics podcast calling out corporate politicians and their media stenographers.
Here, no one is safe from our ridicule. A wise journalist once said that all news can fit into the four basic food groups of news.
The four food groups are Democrats suck, Republicans suck, isn't that weird, and isn't that terrible. Each week, we deep dive on one news story from each category, covering the 2024 election, America's endless proxy wars, and so much more.
Plus, we host weekly interviews with politicians, journalists, writers, rock stars, comedians, and more.
Past guests include Noam Chomsky, Roger Waters, Abby Martin, Noor Erekat, Oliver Stone, Bernie Sanders, and David Cross.
So ditch corporate media and learn what's really going on in the world with Useful Idiots. New episodes drop every Friday wherever you get your podcasts.